Hello, welcome back to the Existential Echo Chamber podcast. I'm continuing right along with my reading of blog posts. As soon as I'm done with these blog posts, we're going to transition into different types of podcasts. But again, I want to thank all of you who are sticking around, all of you who are listening. Please, if you're listening on Spotify, follow along. You can comment, you can react, you can message me. If you're on the blog, you can always comment or interact. If you are totally new to all of this, I thank you for taking time out of your day to consider the ideas and the things that we're talking about on this podcast. So we're going to pick up with an article, a blog post rather, that I wrote on March 29th, 2020. It is the Story of God Part 2. So this is the conclusion to the Story of God series that started with the previous podcast. So if you have not, listened to or read the Story of God, part one, please go back and do that, and I will go ahead and begin reading the Story of God, part two. The Story of God, part two. I am the Lord, and there is no other. Besides me, there is no God. Isaiah 45, 5. Cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is a state of psychological stress created when a person holds or encounters two or more contradictory beliefs, ideas, or values, and participates in an action or experiences events that fundamentally challenge their previous assumptions and view of the world. This is an immediate follow-up from my previous post. If you have not read that, I would encourage you to do so before you read this one. How did belief in many gods become belief in God? Again, I must offer my apologies in advance. There is simply way too much to this story to include everything in a single blog post, or even 100 for that matter. But once more, I will offer some ideas that I have encountered for you to think about and reach your own conclusions. First, let me give you a very brief bit of context. Although there may well have been some groups of people who only worshipped a single deity before the ancient Israelites, such as the Zoroastrians, the evidence isn't very good that monotheism was widespread, and we know almost nothing about these other groups. Historically speaking, it is the view of most academics who research this across the spectrum of related fields that monotheism among Jews developed shortly after the Babylonian exile, which occurred, generally speaking, from around 600 to 539 BCE. The exile is a period of time in which a significant number of people living in the kingdom of Judah were enslaved by the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. In modern terms, this would be like Iraq invading Israel, destroying Jerusalem, and taking half of the population back to Iraq in chains. It was a dark time for the people of Israel. Their temple, the place where God dwelt on earth, had been destroyed, and their culture was in real danger of extinction. It was during this time period that Jews began to make serious attempts at writing down their sacred stories about Yahweh and his relationship to Israel, and no small part out of genuine fear that they would be lost forever as entire generations grew up in Babylon, away from home, and out of touch with their true identity as the chosen people of God. Large parts of what we today would call the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible were written during this time and in the decades and centuries after the exile. Now that you have some basic background on what the Babylonian exile was, I can offer you a brief set of ideas to help answer the question of where some scholars believe the idea of monotheism came from. The ancient Hebrews, from the time they first emerged sometime between 1300 and 1500 BCE, were followers of a tribal deity called Yahweh. His name in English Bibles is translated as the Lord. Lord is usually capitalized. Who was thought to control storms and defend the people of Israel as a great cosmic warrior. While it is absolutely true that early Israelites were fiercely loyal to Yahweh, they almost certainly were not monotheists. They absolutely believed other gods existed. Like with every other culture in recorded history during this time period, they believed in a pantheon of gods and goddesses. Some of these beings are referenced in the Bible. Baal, Asherah, and El were Canaanite divinities that Hebrews were very familiar with. While Hebrews did not deny the existence of these other gods, they obeyed Yahweh's commandment not to worship any of these beings besides him. You are all familiar with this rule, I'm sure, because today we call it the first commandment. I am Yahweh, your God. You shall have no other gods before me. Loyalty to one God, but acceptance of the existence of others, is a form of polytheism sometimes referred to as monolatry. Everything about ancient Israelite culture was centered around tribalism, the idea that society is best organized by sticking to your own ethnic group, the people who share your culture, land, your interests, habits, and lifestyle, and religious beliefs. Yahweh was a tribal god. He was the local god of the Hebrew people. Followers of Yahweh believed that he had called them out to be a separate, unique nation. They believed that he was the head of their armies, their commander-in-chief, and their king. Human rulers of Israel were divinely appointed and served as God's representative on earth, helping to ensure his commandments were obeyed and his will was followed. Hebrews believed that the Lord had made a covenant with Moses to always protect and defend Israel so long as they kept his commandments and did not worship other gods. A quick skim through the Old Testament shows that the Jews were pretty awful about breaking the law of God and worshiping other deities. You see, monolatry was a slippery slope back to paganism, it seems. Ancient Israelites believed that whenever they conquered another territory, nation, or tribe, they did so because Yahweh was guiding and directing the armies of heaven, made up of lesser divine beings who served Yahweh. The Hebrew Bible sometimes calls these servants angels, against their enemies, which of course would naturally have been his enemies as well. They believed that a military victory was literally a clash between their God and his army, and their enemy's chief deity. What happened on earth was a reflection of what happened in the realm of the gods. Thus, a military victory meant that Yahweh had proven himself to be the superior deity, presumably killing the weaker god in the process. Whenever Israel suffered a military defeat, they were faced with a terrible dilemma. Why? How? If Yahweh is fighting on their behalf, how could they possibly lose? You've heard this phrase before. If God is for us, who can be against us? When God apparently fails to show up, however, people of faith start asking why bad things happen. The Israelites believed that they were the good guys and that they were right. They followed the true God and the most powerful God. The rest were just wannabe loser deities who shouldn't even be in the ring with Yahweh. If this is true, how could they possibly lose? This existential anxiety that comes from knowing you're right, but being proven wrong, and being impossible to defeat, but losing nonetheless, is a form of what psychologists call cognitive dissonance. See my definition at the top of the blog. And for further reference, see Avengers Endgame, where Thanos explains that the Avengers are so sure that they are right, even as they are about to lose royally. When human beings encounter information that shatters their worldview and upends everything they believe to be true, cognitive dissonance creates an incredible amount of anxiety that is super hard to overcome and nearly always results in our brains reinterpreting events in a way that calms us down by assuring us that we were still right. This is an automatic process that happens all the time to normal, healthy people. It happens every day. None of us are immune. We just don't think about it. Our brains are wired to rework information in such a way that it suits our chief evolutionary purpose, survival. For early military losses, cognitive dissonance was solved by prophets who emerged to blame the nation's misfortunes on their disobedience to God. Israel had broken Yahweh's law, usually by worshiping foreign gods and having all kinds of crazy sex. As a result of their sinful ways, God had allowed bad things to befall Israel by removing his hedge of protection and refusing to fight on their behalf. This is a view, the main view, of the prophets of the Old Testament. The Israelites later experienced an extreme example of cultural and religious cognitive dissonance when the temple where Yahweh lived on earth was destroyed, and they were carted off to a foreign land and enslaved for 70 years. To overcome this extreme cognitive dissonance, the Israelites adopted a line of thinking that went something like this. Yahweh is the strongest of all gods, and he is our God. He fights for us, and no other force can defeat him. A military loss can sometimes mean God is punishing us, but a total and utter defeat, including the destruction of our temple and us being carted off as slaves, means that Yahweh has been killed. This is not possible. It is inconceivable. Perhaps we've angered him far worse than usual, and he's not simply refusing to defend us this time. What if he sent these Babylonians specifically to punish us? What if he is powerful enough to literally wield other gods and kings against us? Yes, it has to be that. The other alternative is unthinkable. When Babylon fell to the Persians and Jews were allowed to return to Israel and rebuild their temple, they further evolved this logic. Yahweh is more powerful than we originally gave him credit for. He's not just the God of Israel, he is also the God of Babylon and apparently Persia. It probably didn't hurt that they had come in contact around this time with Zoroastrian thought. But really, for our purposes, that's neither here nor there. They would go on to further conclude something like, "We serve a bigger God, and we need to expand our understanding." Scholars believe that it was during this post-exile period, about 500 years before the birth of Jesus, that Jews finally began to cease believing in other gods altogether. There was no longer any need. Yahweh had proven himself Lord of all the earth, an idea that would one day collide with the most powerful kingdom in human history, the Roman Empire. This collision would shake the world and influence Western civilization right down to the present day. And the individual primarily to blame for initiating this monumental confluence of culture, ideas, and beliefs? Jesus of Nazareth, the subject of my next post.